Good afternoon, you're very welcome to today's edition of Saturday with Clare Byrne. On today's programme, the Impact Union says it's not calling off Wednesday's planned strike action by pilots at Ryanair. We'll find out what former SIPTU President Jack O'Connor thinks. One of our guests today is worried about Scientology. We'll find out why. And are we seeing a subtle shift in Fianna Fáil's attitude to coalition with Sinn Féin? All that and much more to come with our panel. But first, it's time for the news now with Christopher McKevitt. Christopher, thank you very much, and you're very welcome to Saturday with Clare Byrne. Joining us today, Kate O'Connell, Fine Gael TD, prominent this week as a member of the Oireachtas Committee on the Eighth Amendment. John Lahart, Fianna Fáil TD, will be talking to us about his take on the Micheál Martin interview in the Irish Times today. Well, we'll be asking you about it, John, anyway. Whether you answer is up to you. Jack O'Connor, former SIPTU president and chair of the Labour Party, and possibly a candidate in the next general election, whenever that might be. Economist Moore MacDool, no doubt, will have a view on the big Ryanair story today. And Michael O'Regan, parliamentary correspondent with the Irish Times, will tell us where we are politically as we come to the end of the calendar year. You're all very welcome. Thank you for coming in today. We were in touch with Impact, the Impact Union, and they're not doing any further interviews today, we understand. But they say the situation is the same as yesterday. This is just in the last little while they told us this. We're available to meet the airline at any time. They say they're not available until Wednesday, and we can't defer the strike action until we have met. So that would seem to suggest that that strike action that the Ryanair pilots had said they were going to take on Wednesday in Ireland will go ahead. Jack, I want to come to you first, obviously, because of where you're coming from. Some say this decision to recognise unions in the case of pilots is a momentous decision, and others are more sceptical about it. Where do you stand?
Well, I don't know. If it's genuine, I welcome it. It is a pity, though, that people have to go run the gauntlet that the pilots had to go to run, or workers in Ryanair have had to run for years for the right to representation in this country. It's a right that's enjoyed by workers in the UK and in most European countries. It's enshrined in various international treaties. It's provided for example, in Article 28 of the Charter of Fundamental Rights in the Lisbon Treaty, which the people of this country endorsed in a referendum back in 2008. And yet, in our laws, workers up and down the country don't have the right to be represented in relation to the matters which most so seriously affect their livelihoods, as the conditions, the pay and conditions and their work. And it's something that that should be addressed. It should be a priority. It's
so
about
you
human
think
rights.
That should be enshrined in legislation. But on the Ryanair situation, I heard Eddie Wilson from the airline speaking yesterday, and he was saying, we're going to take this decision because we don't want to disrupt people over Christmas. So he said yesterday, because we have taken this decision to recognise the union here, the action should be withdrawn and people shouldn't be disrupted.
Yeah, if it's a genuine decision. And as I said at the outset, if it's genuine, I welcome it. But I have to say that people would have a right to be extremely sceptical as to why a meeting can't take place until Wednesday, which coincides with the day on which the action is to occur. And given the track record, they would have every reason to be sceptical of it.
What do you think is behind that? Because they're trying to avoid this action on Wednesday, but yet they're saying we're not going to meet the union until Wednesday. So what's...
Well, I don't know, because I haven't seen any explanation given. And if, as is the case, thousands of people are about to be disrupted by reason of an action which was necessitated by the attitude of the company for several years, and the absence of legislation in this country similar to that which exists in most countries in Europe, which would entitle workers to representation in their place of work, this has had to happen. But I don't know why the company refuses to meet until Wednesday, and as I say, given the track record, the pilots are entirely justified in being sceptical as to what's occurring. But because I noticed there was something on our own Facebook page yesterday, somebody posted, and I thought it was very good that unions are for life, not just for Christmas, and of course, by the way, I think it's true still to say that 70 of the top 100 companies in this country recognise trade unions and deal with them all the time and are able to run very prosperous businesses as a result. And there's no need to be fearful of us at all. We don't bite.
OK, Moore McDougall, do you want to come in here? Because I think what Jack is suggesting, that perhaps Ryanair are trying to get over the hump of this run-up to Christmas here in saying what they've said. That's the suggestion, am I right?
Well, sorry now, just I don't worry about them suing you, Claire, or RTE, but just but as I have nothing, that they probably wouldn't bother suing me. But what I'm saying is that the pilots are entirely justified in being sceptical as to why a meeting can't take place between now and Wednesday, and why the meeting is to take place on the very day the action is to take place, so that they're put under pressure to withdraw the action, which is necessitated by the attitude of that company towards workers over several years. I cannot see, frankly, why a meeting can't take place. The union is available, as they've said, over the weekend and whatever, to scope out the understanding. And by the way, that being said, I should say that if it's genuine, I do welcome it, and I do look forward to the possibility of a good constructive relationship developing in that company with all its employees.
Okay, Moore.
Well, and no more than Jack do I know what's going through either side's in relation to a meeting before or not until Wednesday. It looks to me on the outside like a sort of political battle between two tough guys, the Impact on one hand and Ryanair on the other, determined not to be seen to give ground. But there may be much more to it. One thing interesting about this is that if they go ahead on Wednesday, and it looks so they will.
With the strike.
Assuming that that's going to happen, there will be disruption. But the unions will bear some of the blame in terms of public perception. Now, obviously, some of it will be, some of the blame will go to Ryanair.
Isn't that what Jack suggests is going on? You know.
Well, hang on. Wait a second. Here you have a fight between them. The unions say we must meet immediately. The other side say we can't for reasons I don't understand. I agree with Jack on that. And it's pushing against each other. But if a strike happens, that's the nuclear option. And having it before Christmas is the reason why it's been a threat to Ryanair. But if they do it, and they do fold up Ryanair over Christmas, and they do cause all that, there's not much worse they can do. So if Ryanair are just playing them on and are now being called on that, and they have the strike, what are they going to do afterwards? If they don't really believe Ryanair, they believe that this is all a stunt by Ryanair just to get over the hump of Christmas, and then you have your
strike.
So
what are you suggesting that Impact should do?
Well, I don't know what to do, but I'm just looking at it and thinking that maybe going on strike is not such a good idea if they can avoid it. Now, Jack would explain to me, I'm sure, the difficulties that a union has once it has committed itself and has got the people in the union behind them and they're committed to doing it. It's very difficult. I understand that. Simply fine, we call it. But if they did, they would have the moral high ground. And if at a later stage Ryanair ratted on the deal, so to speak, the unions would be in a very strong position. But there's another aspect to this, which I think Ryanair really have behaved very stupidly. They refuse to recognise unions. They do recognise worker representatives from within Ryanair, but only on a local basis. As I understand it, Jack will correct me if I'm wrong in this, that they will deal with the pilots based in Dublin as a group, and they deal separately with the pilots based in Stansted and so on. It was put up to them that they should have a Europe-wide pilots group that meet them. They wouldn't accept that.
Yeah, yesterday we have a sophisticated system of collective bargaining around Europe with individual groups.
Several ones. Yeah. But it strikes me that it was very foolish when they wanted to keep Impact and the others out, it was very foolish not to say you've got to give some ground and you should think very seriously of meeting your pilots at a European level.
Well,
and dealing with it. But they didn't do the
John Lehart,
they didn't do it.
I don't think it's possible for the pilots to organise on a European level in labour relation terms, but I don't think we, or terms, don't think we should underestimate, you know, the level of work it has taken the pilots to get to this stage. This isn't just happening.
I don't underestimate, John, I don't underestimate that at all.
I think, but I want to acknowledge, which Jack has acknowledged, the fact that Ryanair has made this offer. But it was very taken, I'm firmly on the side of the pilots in this, it was very taken with what Kieran Mulvey has said. Given that they've made that offer to recognise unions, given that they've made it in writing, given that they've made it on the record, I don't think they can resile from it.
No, I don't think so either.
What Kieran Mulvey has said is basically, look, when you make an offer like that, and there are 4 full days left until Tuesday night, and the unions have said we are available 24/7 until Tuesday night, that's a lot of time. Kieran Mulvey's point was, look, it's pretty normal when you take that step for both parties to sit down and thrash out the parameters in which that union recognition is going to take place and flesh it out, put another little bit of flesh on it.
So you think a meeting will happen before
Wednesday? Yeah, and I think Ryanair, I mean, and I have, skin in this game. I have nephews, much cherished nephews coming home on Ryanair flights on Wednesday. I think Ryanair has to blink on this. I think
are your nephews rebooking? Are they going to hold out?
They're holding out. I think that they, pilots are quite justifiably suspicious. And I think it's up to Ryanair to deliver more substantially, in practical, substantial terms, on the words that it's put in writing and that it's put on the public record.
I would like to see them. The difficulty I have with that, John, is that if Ryanair rat on this deal, their name will be mud. I mean, I'd see Michael O'Leary's head rolling as a consequence if they did. I think it would be impossible for the present management to continue if they're only playing the unions along, playing the pilots along to get over the hump of Christmas. Yep. I find that impossible to believe. I don't understand why they can't have a meeting, at least pro forma, in order. I don't understand that. But I have a feeling that in the end, you have to assume that they are behaving very badly, that they've no intention of doing this, or alternatively, that they're just not behaving very
or
cleverly.
Or they think that the step that they've taken is sufficient, that it is so groundbreaking. And let's face it, it is such a ground and unprecedented.
It's not enough.
Exactly.
I mean, in the Jack will confirm this, I think. In the long history of industrial relations in this country, and the Irish trade union movement has a long and distinguished history, I was involved years ago in my own union, the National Union of Journalists. And if an employer, if trade union representatives seek a meeting with management, which will avert a pretty serious dispute, management is available pretty well immediately, if it's that serious. Now, I welcome Michael O'Leary's road to Damascus, or road to Mullingar, wherever he lives, And, you know, he's a man who's done a lot for his...
Absolutely.
He's done a lot. He's put airfares within, you know, it's affordable now to a lot of consumers when it wasn't. He's an affable, personable man to meet. I could never understand his resistance to trade unions. And I think, I think that the fault will lie with Michael O'Leary if there's not a meeting, and a meeting soon.
Kate?
I suppose, just to pick up on what Michael said there, I mean, I can understand to some extent Michael O'Leary's aversion to unions with his business model that he took on. The lean company, it's a friend of mine actually works for Ryanair. There's an element of camaraderie among the staff that they built this business from the start. But I think what we're seeing here now is a company that's evolved, and it's now a global company, very profitable, and it's only natural that if a company evolves to this point that they would start recognising unions. So look, I think they have to meet before Wednesday. I do agree that Michael O'Leary is in difficulty. If there's a strike on Wednesday, and if this game of chicken continues, but I'd agree with John Lehart. I think something will happen before Wednesday. Mm-hmm. But I can see where he's coming from.
The next chapter has to be that the cabin crew.
Absolutely.
We'll want the same deal.
It's only natural.
It's already,
the pilots.
That's already happening.
And rightly so.
I know they've written,
but
haven't they?
That shouldn't be the next chapter. We're talking about one company. There are hundreds of thousands of workers in this country who do not enjoy the benefit of representation.
And you think that that needs to be covered under legislation?
Yes, and all that is required is to legislate in accordance with Article 28 of the Charter of Fundamental Rights of the Lisbon Treaty, which the people of this country have already adopted in a referendum. And if there's some frightening things happening in this country, and the people who are the victims of it have no voice. Eurofound, there, its latest study in living and working conditions, based on surveys in 2015 into 2016, estimates, and there's no, this hasn't been challenged, that 46%. Imagine that. 46% of the people who are under the age of 35 in this country are on what they call non-standard contracts of employment.
Precarious employment.
Yeah, so they can't, insecure work, so they can't get mortgages. They can't even get a loan to buy a car. They don't know if they'll have a job this time next year. Now, some of them are in that situation because they want to be, but a great many people are not. And what's the big deal in Ireland that in a country, a developed country, one of the most developed countries in the world, that's part of the European Union, where most countries legislate to allow workers an entitlement to collective bargaining, that we end up with a major company in our country in the teeth of Christmas having a row with its staff about a right that its staff should enjoy anyhow?
Kate, are you aware of any plans to legislate for rights to collective bargaining for workers?
No, I'm not aware, and I know, as you mentioned at the outset, maybe Jack is going to run the next time, and perhaps it'll be in his gift to bring forth legislation like that. I mean, it is concerning. It is concerning that 46% of people under 35 have no union representation. Now,
not that they have no union representation.
It's contracts
or the precarious contracts.
And
we have to take into account that, obviously, as you said, that suit certain people who want summertime work or weekend work, or they only want to work when children are in school or and all that. But I suppose we have to be responsible when it comes. We don't want a situation like in France where there's huge union representation and this country can be shut down, essentially.
There's only 7% of the workers in France are in unions, actually.
But that's all you need to shut the country down,
huge
Jack.
Power.
The thing with the cabin crew, though.
Believe it or not, we're not talking about arming people. We're talking about equipping people with the right to be represented.
But they have Jack.
No, they don't. Because the employers have a right more.
Yeah.
It adds up to nothing, the right they have. Because
they're
the employers,
entitled to join a union.
Yes. And it adds
and
up
they don't
to,
have to join a
and
union.
And it adds up to nothing unless the employer is obliged, when a majority of the relevant workers want it, to deal with the union. And that issue has been tested, by the way, in the European Court of Human Rights, not once, but twice. And the court has held that the right to collective bargaining is an essential corollary of what you're talking about, which is the constitutional right to freedom of association. But we, in this country, unlike Britain and unlike most countries in Europe, and believe it or not, unlike the United States of America, deny our workers the right to be represented. And that is something in this day and age that we should be correcting by way of legislation.
The problem with all this, Jack, is that when you get out of the sectors where the firms concerned have big market power, like Ryanair, which make them an obvious target for being able to use union power to get a better deal for their workers. But when you get outside that and you look at the private sector in the Irish economy, where people are entitled to join unions, and a lot of firms do recognise unions, people don't join unions. There's a problem here.
Very few more. It'll be a small minority.
But if you look at the cabin crew,
most workers in this country are not in a union.
No, but people who opt out by choice would be a minority.
But if you look
my experience.
Excuse me. It's not a question of opting out. It's a question of opting in. People don't join unions.
Because you have to run the gauntlet. Because you have to run the gauntlet on intimidation.
The Irish Federation of University Teachers, whom I presume represented yourself.
No, not me.
Oh, did they not? Well,
I wasn't a member.
They were quite a... By choice, is it?
By choice.
Yeah. But I mean, they were founded, what, in the 1960s by Cather Asmal, among others. I presume they enhanced your conditions and your salary over the years, did they?
I have no idea whether, looking back on it, I'm retired now since when?
Yes, but I mean, there would have been a powerful advocate for you and your colleagues, whether you opt in or out.
But I don't know if the union is clear. Can I just say about
John,
about the cabin crew, can I deal with
IFOOT and this? Okay. They would only be strong if you really believed, A, that they could actually organise a strike, and B, that anybody out there would give a damn on their behalf if a bunch of highly paid and generally seen to be very well cosseted people were having a strike. IFOOT didn't make much sense in terms of what happened. The reason Irish academics got paid so well, and I have to say I would find a lot of difficulty in justifying what went in as academic pay during the Celtic Tiger years, is because they latched themselves onto the public sector. They got themselves agreed to be public sector workers.
Well, how did they do that?
I think it's going to be different for the cabin crew for the simple reason I think there's something like 8,000 cabin crew, and what they're looking for, as far as I understand it, is a reasonable framework for dialogue, because most of them, the bulk of the cabin crew, Jack, are agency workers.
That's another form of exploitation which is prevalent in this country. You see, what's happening in the country now, and it has been underway for some time,
the gig economy,
is a practice on the part of some bad employers, and I fully acknowledge there are a great many good employers. I know quite a number of them, and they're not frightened of me at all. But there is a practice among a certain category of bad employers of arranging things so that they have no obligation whatsoever to the people who work for them. And there are various devices by means of which this is affected. One of them is bogus self-employment. So people are effectively directly employed, but they're told you have to declare yourself self-employed so that I, as the employer, have no obligations to you whatsoever.
Yeah, but you're overlooking the fact.
John, allow me to finish now. Okay. You introduced these agencies because another tool. There is a legitimate, quite a legitimate employment agency industry in the country, and it is required in a dynamically growing economy, and there are very good agencies who do respect the people they work with and so on. But there is a practice in certain sectors of the economy of employing people to work through agencies so that the employer concerned has no obligations whatsoever.
Okay. A little bit of capitalist that's left in my brain would not want to overlook the fact that Michael O'Leary is probably the greatest entrepreneur this country has ever seen. That's the first thing. That tourism during the crash was the most singularly resilient product that we had in the country. And Ryanair's ability to fly people cheaply in and out of the country should never be underestimated, ended up in a radical transformation of the national airline and a radical transformation in the way people and consumers look at flying and look at reaching other parts of the world, and that can never be overlooked. Okay. But I think it's the pilot's time.
All right,
but it didn't have to. You don't have to utilise. I'm not speaking specifically of Ryanair, but you don't have to utilise slave labour practices in order to achieve those ends. Southwest Airlines in the United States and a number of other airlines, which incidentally is the model which Ryanair employed, they recognise and deal with unions.
Okay, we'll leave that there. I'm going to move on now to a wide-ranging interview that Micheál Martin gave to the Irish Times today. Fia Kelly, Michael O'Regan, your colleague, was the interviewer. And I just want to read this section. When asked if he ever sees himself serving in office with Sinn Féin, he replies, "I can't." But when pressed, he slightly elaborates. "I'm not saying never. I'm not living to 100, like. What I'm simply saying is I don't see it." Now, will you tell me, Michael O'Regan, you who has watched this for many years, is there a subtle shift in language there?
There is. John will deny it, but there is. The interesting opening paragraph, Claire, in Fia Kelly's interview in the Irish Times is worth repeating because it relates to interpreting what Micheál has said later. This is how Fia opens his article in the Irish Times. "Micheál Martin asks that you do not read between the lines in what he is saying to divine meaning. But at times you are left with no other option." And as you come to the interview of that, come to the end of that interview and the reference you made to Sinn Féin, you have to try and interpret what he's saying. Look, Micheál Martin has said no deal with Sinn Féin after the next election. What he's doing here, of course, this is largely political. He's looking to the middle ground voter. Leo, the people who get up early in the morning, middle Ireland, he's appealing to them. Leo ruling out a deal with Sinn Féin. Micheál doing the same. Some of his colleagues, John may confirm this for us, some of his colleagues not happy with that. They would be happy to do a deal with Sinn Féin after the election. This is a very subtle shift. The reality for Micheál Martin is this, and by the way, he could live to 100. He lives in salads and fruit and green tea, so he may well live to be 100. He may well be leader at 100.
That's not what's at issue here.
It's not, in fairness.
It's a wonderful thought.
Indeed, yeah. But after the election, if Fianna Fáil doesn't get into power and Micheál is Taoiseach, Micheál stands down as leader. So there's a lot at stake for Micheál Martin in terms of his political career. Mary Lou MacDonald will take over in the spring as leader of Sinn Féin. Entirely different to Gerry Adams, though alleged paramilitary baggage, young woman, South Dublin. I suspect as well that what she may do is she may move Sinn Féin subtly more towards the middle. While trying to retain, of course, its core base. It won't be easy, but
the middle's getting crowded.
It
now.
Is. It's getting very crowded. But if the opinion poll showed, the most recent opinion poll in the Irish Times showed, it's where it's at politically. And what Micheál has to do is the formation of the next government will be a numbers game. Absolutely, it'll boil down to putting the numbers together. I don't think you'll have a repeat of this absurd new politics, confidence and supply. No party will sacrifice themselves, mind you. They did it for political expedience like Fianna Fáil is doing at the moment. So I think you'll need a government, if the numbers add up, with a majority. And if Sinn Féin and Fianna Fáil look like making a majority, Micheál Martin, he'll deny this, of course, he could change his mind in the national interest. Look historically, Claire. John Bruton in the early 1990s said, no coalition government involving democratic left.
Mm-hmm.
2 years later, he changes his mind. Democratic left are part of a rainbow government, a very effective government. He has a very good working relationship with Princess de Rossa. Charlie Haughey had Des O'Malley expelled from Fianna Fáil in the 80s for, God help us, John, conduct and becoming. Des O'Malley said Charlie Haughey was unfit for public office.
And
in
yes,
89,
and yes,
they did a deal. So, yes, I think Fia Kelly's interview today...
I think this
today
is different, is, though, Michael. I mean, have we ever heard such regular and vociferous denials about a coalition?
Oh God, we have, Claire. I mean, oh, believe me, we have.
Over and over again.
Yes, I've been there, Claire.
Speeches at prestigious occasions.
Yes, I know.
No, and, nay, never.
Yeah, and I admire your idealism. And your sense of belief in the political structures that we have. I've been there, Claire. I've covered general election campaigns where people have been emphatic. Don't believe anything you hear or anything you hear during the general election campaign. It changes afterwards.
John, I'm having my idealism shattered here. Come on, what's going on?
Well, you've given Michael his multi-annual opportunity to deliver a good big thrashing and spanking to Fianna Fáil, which he loves. And I'm very fond of Michael, but there isn't a programme that goes by that he doesn't get the opportunity or take the opportunity to do it.
I blame Fine Gael for being part of it as well.
If you're going to parse those couple of sentences apart that rigorously, I mean, I think probably his last sentence in that interview is very telling as well. When Fiac asks him, because he mentions about Albert Reynolds and previous Fianna Fáil leaders, and he said, you know, do you have the hunger to be Taoiseach? And he says, yes, I do, and the patience. And I think that's the critical point, that there, Michael says, you know, if and whatever events occur between now and the next election, whenever that is going to be, there's an assumption on your part that, you know, if we're not back in government, that Micheál will be, you know, dumped as Fianna Fáil leader. Don't think you can take any of those things.
Where do you
granted.
Stand on the Sinn Féin question?
I see absolutely no change. I mean, you've adverted to it on every big occasion, whether it was Cardiff Fáil dinners, whether it was a few weeks before it at the Ardesh. At every single occasion, I am mindful now as well. You've got to admit, John, that
interview and those couple of sentences, there is a chink of light there that wasn't
but
there
he is
before.
Kind of saying that, look, I'm not going to live until 100. I'm mindful that Micheál, because I was talking to him,
I'm
later
not
in the week,
saying
had,
never
had six or seven, had six or. I'm interpreting that as saying actually, I'm not saying never. That at some stage in the future, Fianna Fáil wouldn't go into some kind of government arrangement with Sinn Féin. But in terms of the next election, this is not on
Claire,
offer. And it's not on offer emphatically for a whole load of reasons that have been very, very, very articulated. What is interesting, though, I think in the last few weeks, is some of the comments in the speeches by the Taoiseach. I often think there are two leaders of Fine Gael now, with both Simon and Leo, but some of the comments by the Taoiseach are definitely moving teasingly towards and invitingly towards the Sinn Féin party in terms of leadership, in terms of the nationalist population in the north and things like that. But that's something that's never explored.
Can I ask Michael a question? I find it a bit shocking when people, at my age, I find it a bit shocking when people are so cynical about politics. But I'm going to accept for the purpose of the argument that it's purely, as Michael said, a numbers game. But if it's purely a numbers game, Michael, do you think that if the numbers added up, despite what has been said, that Fine Gael wouldn't do a deal with Sinn Féin?
Yes, they would. Absolutely. Absolutely they would. I've no doubt about it.
Kate,
Leo would come out accompanied by Kate and the choir boys out onto the plinth
singing
and
for their supper.
And say, I've had long discussions on this with Mary Lou MacDonald.
We have
spoken late into the night with Mary Lou MacDonald, and I'm now satisfied we can do a deal. This is a new Sinn Féin.
Michael, there's an idea.
To disillusion you even further, because I know you two are an idealist.
I'm an economist. They're not idealists.
After the election, Leo said, you can't possibly appoint somebody to a ministerial office if it's their first term in the Dáil. That was changed pretty rapidly.
It was. Kate, come on.
Suppose it is a numbers game, and we've heard ad infinitum in the past how X, Y and Z wouldn't go in with whoever. I don't see ever there being a confidence and supply arrangement again. Just my own personal view.
Because it doesn't work?
It's not that it doesn't work. I think that there are huge difficulties there. It was necessary at the time. And I obviously commend Fianna Fáil acted very responsibly in taking up the role that they did. And it has worked in this period. But I don't see it personally as a way to govern. But as for Fine Gael and Sinn Féin, like that, anything could happen. Personally, our economic position is very different to Sinn Féin. But like that,
there would be those in your own party who would be horrified now that you said that today.
Yes, well, economically, we would be very, very far away from
political
them.
Realism.
But it is the reality. And we have to accept that Sinn Féin, despite their past and despite their present, have a mandate to be in Leinster House. And I think, is it 19 they have? But they have a good whack of TDs. So you have to respect that people voted for them, and the people of Ireland voted in great numbers. And I do think the change to Mary Lou will change the face of Sinn Féin. And also, just to refer to what John said about the two leaders, I mean, the arrival of Brexit has changed the way we're looking at the island of Ireland. And definitely the leadership, both the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach, feel very strongly about representing people on both sides of the border and the status quo that has been there for years, the hard-won relationships we have across the border, the hard-won peace. And I know in particular Simon Coveney feels very, very strongly about representing the views of nationalists, the far side of the border.
How do you think Leo Varadkar would react to you saying that today, having compared Mary Lou MacDonald to Marine Le Pen, accusing her of always being scripted? I mean, the brunt of his ire is reserved for Sinn Féin. There's no doubt about it.
No, but the brunt of my ire isn't, and you can choose whoever your opposition is. I mean, I tend to direct most of my ire towards Fianna Fáil personally, but I think Mary Lou MacDonald, I consider her a friend of mine. We are from the same area of Dublin.
Indeed.
And I see her as a very capable lady. I don't agree with many of their policies, but I do respect the fact that she's a very capable politician. And who knows what the next election will bring.
Claire, I'm around long enough to remember Pat Rabbit and Damon Gilmore as young trade union officials and members of the then Sinn Féin, the Workers' Party. No particular paramilitary link. Ideologically, they wanted to nationalise the banks at that stage. How right they were, as subsequent events turned out. Now, Eamon Gilmore later became Taoiseach, leader of the Labour Party, sharing power with Fine Gael, who in his young days would have seen as the establishment. Pat Rabbit became a minister. Politics evolves, individuals evolve.
And like, from my experience dealing with Sinn Féin as a party, as a backbencher, and you know, John, all we have to do in the in committee work. I mean, I worked with Sinn Féin very closely on the Sláinte Care, the 10-year health report, and we got that over the line with all bar Mick Barry not signing up to it. The 8th Amendment Committee, we worked very, very hard with Sinn Féin, or I worked personally very hard with Sinn Féin in the last few days this week to come up with a composite amendment that would be reflective of Sinn Féin's position. So personally, from my experience
you
in Leinster,
you can work with
I
them.
I have been able to work successfully with them. However, we have to respect the people that are alive today, whose lives have been destroyed by violence in the north. I suppose only time will heal the great hurt. I don't think we're at that time yet. But we always, as politicians, have to be mindful that I remember Oma well, but there are a generation of people in Ireland that have absolutely no memory or time for that time. But it is very, very raw for the people that are still suffering as a result of the violence.
Jack, last word to you and then we'll take a quick break.
Yeah, but I don't see any reason why Sinn Féin shouldn't be considered as a party that is capable of being in government. And I don't think that people in the establishment should be too concerned about them either. Sinn Féin is a Republican party. There are no parallels, incidentally, between it and Marine Le Pen's fascists. But it is not a socialist party. And in the nationalist tradition, when nationalist parties find themselves in power, they will drift inevitably to the right. And so the establishment here should not be worried about either of the centre-right parties making an arrangement with another party in the nationalist tradition, because it's not a socialist party. But I think, though, that the discussion we should be having is not about these musical chairs. It's about what kind of politics and what kind of economics and what kind of issues will be prioritised by the next government. Because the next government, whoever they are, thanks to the sacrifices the people made over the last few years, and thanks to the participation of my party, the Labour Party, in the government, the next government will have a surplus on the current side of €5 billion per annum. And the question really is as to whether that money is going to be spent on building houses for our people, rebuilding our public health service, developing education and childcare, or it's going to be wasted buying votes with tax cuts. Okay. That's the real debate.
Just very briefly, right. Claire, can I... There's a
really
charming,
quickly, Michael,
very quickly,
I have
there's
to take
a charming
a break.
Line from that interview in the Irish Times today where, after the Francis Fitzgerald business letter, Micheál says, himself and Leo, we got to know each other a little bit better. Lovely. I believe they're probably, as we speak, having tea and mince pie, although mince pies wouldn't
green
really
tea.
Be in
green
tea and mince pies. It's a charming little line.
A couple
line,
of
isn't
apples.
It?
Take a break. Back after this. Welcome back to the programme. We have Kate O'Connell from Fine Gael, John Lahart, Fianna Fáil, Jack O'Connor, former SIP2 president, Moore MacDool, economist, and Michael O'Regan from the Irish Times. I'm going to move on to something completely different now because the Scientologists, John, have opened a big new function area in your constituency. Mm. You're concerned about it. Why?
Well, I mean, I know as much as anybody else does about Scientologists. That's from what I've read, and obviously names like Tom Cruise. Background to where they're located is the Victory Centre in my constituency in Firhouse. Firhouse is located halfway between, say, Rathfarnham and Talla. The Victory Centre was run by a Christian evangelical church, an incredible facility, but it was open to the public for a number of years. Then they ran into the recession. It has a 700-seater auditorium. A lot of local groups used it. There's a lovely coffee shop. So it was kind of open with no agenda. It's been lying idle for 4 or 5 years. State-of-the-art facility. I tried to get the IT in Talla interested in it as a satellite building. And there were other attempts for a post-primary school, but we were told the only way it could be converted into a post-primary school was by demolishing it and building a post-primary school. So the Scientologists, about whom we know very little, except by rumour, have bought it. And it seems to be thriving. So I tried in terms of people attending functions. I tried by way of parliamentary question to the Minister for Justice, and I'm roughly paraphrasing the questions, kind of saying, look, is there any reason, because there is concern locally because of the rumours that people have heard and the kind of things that they associate with Scientology, Are there any red flags, either through the Garda Commissioner's Office, from the local Gardaí, or just even nationally in relation to Scientologists? Is there anything people need to be concerned about? I mean, that was really what I was doing in terms of representation.
And what answer did
the
you get
The response was, you know, quote of the constitutional article that protects freedom of religion.
So they've every right to be here, in other words.
Precisely, yeah.
They asked to meet you, is that right? They asked to meet all of the politicians in the constituency.
Yeah, did they met with, well, they didn't, their PR firm or middle person.
You didn't meet them though, did you?
No, I didn't. I don't like meeting the middle person. And because there was concern locally, until I had, and I haven't been satisfied that people ought not to have concerns about anything that's kind of relatively secretive, then I just didn't think it was in anybody's best interest.
Because there's a big article about Scientology in Ireland in the Irish Times today, and their representative told the Irish Times that politicians in the area have been into that facility have asked to use the facilities.
Okay. Well, I know
that's not you, is it?
No. In the previous building, some local politicians used it as a clinic to meet local people. I mean, it is very much as a facility, as a physical piece of infrastructure. Mm-hmm. I think that's why people were really concerned about losing it. People felt they could go into it. It was open. It's an really impressive piece of infrastructure that
Joe
would
Duffy was talking to people on Liveline about this all week. They've got a big winter wonderland thing happening there this week. Are people going in?
It is. I passed by it the other night and it was packed. Who it's packed with, I don't know. There were double-decker buses outside, which would indicate that they're not coming from the immediate locality. But, you know, people could contradict me on that. But I think it is also relatively adjacent to, a mile or two away from, a very vulnerable area of where there's serious kind of socio disadvantage, drugs related issues, and people have concern about vulnerable members of our community being open to the kind of suggestive message that Scientology has to offer in terms of, you know, solutions, simple solutions to kind of more complex issues that people face. And I don't really want to go beyond that. And again, that's based on what, you know, I've just read and heard. There's a lot of rumour around Scientology that could quite easily be cleared up, you know, if they came out directly themselves rather than through PR companies.
Okay, I think I'm going to take our break now and come back and we'll talk about some highlights from the political year after this. Now, Michael O'Regan, in the next 10 minutes, the 10 minutes that we have left, you're going to take us through some of the political highlights of the year, and in particular, I suppose, Leo's time in office towards the end of the year. Where do you want to start?
Well, I suppose Brexit was hanging over us, you know, since the referendum in the UK. That's there. That's a constant fear in the background. But then you had the whistleblower controversy. You had the resignation of a Garda commissioner. You had the subsequent political controversy leading to the resignation of Francis Fitzgerald. You had the ongoing problems with homelessness and the problems in health. Politically, very significant. Enda Kenny leaves the stage. He's succeeded by Leo Varadkar. Interesting election in that Simon Coveney had the support of the grassroots, as it were, but Leo won the day with the parliamentary party. Then you had the slow exit, which will happen now in the new year, of Gerry Adams. He was talking at one stage of leading the party into the next election. It was never going to be like
that. And that's happening in February,
And that's happening in February. You had the continuation of this hideous new politics, whereby it's a do-nothing doll. The doll sits endless hours now. I mean endless hours. By the way, with no regard for the staff of Leinster House, who have to work incredibly long hours, you have...
Or journalists.
Or the journalists,
nobody has sympathy for the media, John, so forget
Are
about
you shaking
the,
your head more, John? Don't agree that new politics doesn't work.
It is working. You may not like what it's doing. It is working. I can see that there are problems with it, and it is a very delicate plant. And when the wind blows frostily, anything can happen.
It's a rotting plant.
But you know, earlier there was a discussion about respecting the right of the people to vote people in. We voted people in numbers, which really made the government we have inevitable. There is no other way. it's very difficult for Fianna Fáil to be in opposition and simultaneously keeping the old enemy in government. It's very difficult for Fine Gael to be in government and having to be dealing with the old enemy. That's true. But to say that it doesn't work in a grandiose, sweeping statement is simply not fair.
Name one single major achievement then, Moore.
Governing the country.
Look, the country isn't being government. Look at the problem with housing.
First of all, you're not going to, no matter who's in government, nobody was going to sort out the housing problem in 6 months. So let's drop that.
It hasn't been 6 months, though, Moore.
They're in government for 6 months. Now, whether it would have been Fianna Fáil in government with a majority, Fine Gael in government with a majority, a coalition between them, or a confidence and supply arrangement, they weren't going to sort out the homelessness problem, or that, which is only one part of a bigger problem, in 6 months. So really, to say that it isn't working because they haven't sorted out the housing market is silly.
But I don't know where you're getting the 6 months from. I mean, this Fine Gael has been in power for years.
Yeah.
But this government under Varadkar has been in power since what, May?
June.
First right, June, 6 months.
He was a minister. Okay. He was a minister
in previous
government.
You can't completely divorce Leo Varadkar from the previous administration.
He just didn't come out of the sky, you know.
I'm not suggesting he didn't come out of the sky. But you look at what he did or didn't do and what this government has done with the support of Fianna Fáil in relation to the biggest crisis this country has faced in 50 years, and people out there, I maintain, don't even realise how serious it is. And Varadkar, with Micheál Martin's support, has managed to secure something that people really didn't think would be secured.
500,000 of the 1.4 billion budget for rebuilding Ireland has been spent in this year. That's the budget for building social housing units. Yeah. I mean, that to me is not, it's not getting anywhere, is it? We've 809 social housing units built in the first 9 months of this year out of a target of over 2,000.
Yes, that's right. They haven't done everything. But
they haven't even done what they promised to do, though.
They've tried. I mean, but I don't. This is not a partisan thing. It's easy for journalists, firmly seated on the ditch as hurlers, to castigate a government, whether it's the last government under Fianna Fáil, for being the
Hang
most
on,
disastrous.
Moore, this isn't about journalists. This is about a government making a commitment to the people. We will build 2,054 social housing units in 2017. And in the first 9 months, they do 800.
That's nothing
to do with journalists. That's got to do with commitments that you make to the people that you're governing.
Yeah, but the problem you see isn't really about the structures or the relationships between the two centre right parties who have managed since the foundation of the state to convince people that they're different. There is one thing happening with this arrangement is that it's gradually exposing the fact that there's no difference between them. But I do agree with Moore for once. I always knew if we were long enough around, we'd agree on something. I do agree that you can't solve the problem of the housing problem in 6 months. But the problem is that the policies that are being pursued by the present Fine Gael Fianna Fáil arrangement won't solve it in 6 years or in 60 years because it's relying on the private sector to do something that it has proved itself incapable of doing since the 1980s.
You're not up to date, Jack.
I know, I'm quite up to date.
You can say
what you like. And the other thing about it is I am not in the position of somebody who has changed places over the years. I'm saying now what I've always been saying, and I've always defended it. And the thing about it is that unless we face up to the fact that we have to build social houses through public expenditure, we will not solve the problem. And incidentally, the problem isn't just about the 3,000 children or the people who are sleeping on doors. The problem is that the young people who want to buy a house can't buy a house because of the shortage of supply. And the greatest benefit of public housing is that it moderates the market.
Okay. Kate?
I just want to mention something that was said there. I mean, I don't think the success to date of the Brexit negotiations can be put down to confidence in supply.
Absolutely.
I think
not.
That it's, you know, Brexit, I think everyone in Leinster House, every elected member in both houses of the Roctors know that Brexit posed a huge threat to our country. And I think every party was mature enough to work together. So I don't think that's anything to do with confidence supply. I think it's just a realisation from all the parties that we have to work together on this. And you can see it through the debates in the Dáil that, you know, although people have different views on things or certain things could be tweaked a bit or perhaps language that was used, people mightn't be okay with it. But in general, it's an all of Parliament approach to things rather than to do with confidence and
in
supply.
The time we have left, and Kate, you were involved in the work of the Committee on the Eighth Amendment, and we are going to be talking about this a lot in the new year up to May when that referendum is expected to happen. What day next week will we see the report?
The 20th. I think that's Wednesday.
Okay, Wednesday. So, and from there, what happens?
Yeah, so on Wednesday, we will have the report published. Then I'd expect everyone read it over Christmas. It's going to be a very short report. I'd imagine no more than 15 pages. Then obviously appendices and references will take up a huge amount, but the bulk of it, the new stuff will only be maybe 15 pages. It will then go to Department of Health and to government to have a look at it. And the Department of Health under Simon Harris are working on heads of bill that will be flexible enough to have dealt with whatever came out of the committee. It will then go to the Dáil for debate and into the Senate. There are rumours that will happen very early into the next term. It will then be voted on and then a referendum will be put to the people in May.
Okay, we have to leave it there. Our time is out, but thank you all very much indeed for coming in today. We are back on air on next Saturday with a special show at 11 o'clock and I hope you can join me on RT1 television Monday night at 10:30. Enjoy the rest of the weekend.
Saturday with Clare Byrne was produced by Anne Farrell. The broadcast coordinator was David Phelan. Research was by Leslie Anderson and Sheila Nivuil was on sound.